passion's gone out of it, or the fire's gone out of it. And what we see, I'm seeing a lot with people, is they've lost motivation. Some have lost confidence. Some have lost, you know, obviously structure, schedule, routine, all of that gone. And really people feeling they're stuck in a rut. I think if I had to sum it up in a sentence, a lot of people are feeling stuck in a rut. A friend of mine who was a great mentor, he's in his 80s now, and he said, never pigeonhole yourself into one way of thinking or one model of helping. And he said, what he learned, he was a psychologist, and he said what he's learned, that from pursuing certain avenues, they were very much in one direction. And I'm not saying this is true for all of them, but back then it was always, you know, it's this way of thinking or this way of whatever. So I just never pursued it that way, because I said, I want to learn from all of them, and I want to learn as much as I can, take the meat, leave the bones, and work out formulas that I know work, tried and tested with clients myself. And that was the route I took. You know, and that was 15 years ago. It's very different now. And that's not a sweeping general statement about all, you know, whatever studies or colleges, but that was just my choice at that time. And that's why I stayed under the umbrella of life coach. There we are.
Yeah. And isn't it funny? Like, you know, that, you know, life coach 15 years ago wasn't as cool as it is now, or wasn't as kind of topical as it is now.
You're right. Listen, Stephanie, I tell you something. It was like, what? You're a life what? You know, and nobody knew what it was. And I said, it's the only kind of title I can come across that helped me. And then I was fortunate enough to be invited to speak kind of stateside, and I did a few events over there, and I got to meet other kind of, like, and I realized, you know, this is what it is, but Ireland just don't understand what this is. It's not even a thing. Like, even to get qualifications was really hard back then, because you couldn't just, you know, get actual recognized, accredited life coaching. You couldn't just get it anywhere. So it was hard even to negotiate that. But over time, obviously came together. But I think if you ask me what makes someone, or, you know, if someone likes a life coach, you've got to like people. And I think you've got to be, what makes a good life coach is not the credentials, qualifications, or how many books on their shelves, you know. I think really it comes down to experience and passion. Do they really genuinely, legitimately care for people? Because I've seen some people kind of want to do it as a job, but not necessarily. It really is, for me, it's more of a purpose thing. And I think that has to be your driver. And if you're driven like that, you're just going to be good at it, most likely. You know, that's my two cents anyway.
And it's crazy, because how the, you know, the tables have turned, being, you know, that this pandemic that's been going on for over a year, and the way Ireland's gone back into lockdown. And I do want to keep this evergreen, although nobody will forget anything that they've been through in 2020 and 2021. But it's crazy now how important and how relevant being a life coach is, and how many people would be clinging on to the idea of, you know, having a life coach, or, you know, wanting to now have a life coach, now that we all have look at things a lot differently, you know.
You know, and that's a really good point, Stephanie, because what I mean, I've seen is that people now, I think life coaching now, people kind of get it, and they go, you know, I get what it is. It's not a therapist. It's not a counselor. It's a different facet. It's looking now, but it's future focused, you know. And I think very much, I mean, if you, like, over the years, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be, I suppose, have clients and build a business from it. But what I've seen in the last kind of year and a half from particularly what we've gone through, that, you know, the COVID and all that stuff, people have been very much self-examining. You know, it's kind of like we're stuck at home, and now we're forced to look in the mirror at ourselves and face some stuff that we may have been keeping ourselves busy to avoid. And now we're facing all these things. And some people have even, like, I mean, clients I have, they kind of said, I've been doing this job for X amount of years or whatever, and now I'm just working from home. And then I'm going, do I really want to do this anymore? Is this actually the job I want? And what they sometimes will say, you know, the passion's gone out of it, or the fire's gone out of it. And what we see, I'm seeing a lot with people, is they've lost motivation. Some have lost confidence. Some have lost, you know, obviously structure, schedule, routine, all of that gone. And really people feeling they're stuck in a rut. I think if I had to sum it up in a sentence, a lot of people are feeling stuck in a rut for whatever reason, like great intentions, but too many pajama days more than they want, you know. And there's nothing wrong with a pajama day, but you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people are kind of stuck in that rut, or I've just lost focus, because their job was their focus, and working that business, if they were self-employed or working for someone, that was their focus. And now when that's taken away and they're working at home, they're reevaluating, you know, what is this all about? What am I about? is this my purpose and passion, and is there fulfillment and happiness? And I think purpose is such a big word, and I think it's overused. I will say, you know, because what gives you a sense of purpose today may not next year. You know, it's not this big life commitment of this is my purpose. Purposes change. You know, if you talk to a mom who's just had a baby, her purpose right there and then is that looking after that baby, you know? So purpose, we can sometimes overthink that too, but I think a lot of people, yeah, definitely the last year, I know from inquiries, I've seen a lot as well, relationship issues. You know, couples who are doing well, but are doing okay, but when locked together, joined at the hip, and now all of a sudden they're, you know, I suppose at each other, and it's not going too well. So I've seen that too.
Do you think people, and, you know, myself included, are, do you think naturally we, you know, when the world is normal pre-COVID or pre-pandemic, we kind of cling on to things as, and we don't realize that, you know, maybe this career isn't actually for me, or maybe, you know, this relationship isn't actually for me. And we almost get lost in the busyness, the schedules, the mundaneness, or kind of just the, this is how it is kind of thing. And that's all kind of gone now. It's peeled back.
Yeah. And I think if you're not in a rut, you're in a routine. It's one or the other. And if, you know, and if you're in a routine, it's, is it one that's serving you well, or is it one that's kind of, you know, robbing your happiness, so to speak, or your peace? But at the same time, yeah, I think we are very much, look, humans, we're creatures of habit, right? I mean, we like to know where we're eating, what we're eating, when we're eating, you know, we like to have structure. And I think our structures have been turned on their head socially, you know, career-wise, economically, financially, all of that stuff. And I think with that being said, there's a lot that we needed to change. Because if I said to anybody 2 years ago, and I said, listen, you know, and I just stopped them in the middle of their going, I say, what would you change? Everyone would answer the question. I would think most people, I wish I had more time to stay at home, more time to chill out. Well, we've got that in buckets for the last year. So how did that go?
Yeah. Exactly,
so I think, you know, we were definitely the old normal, if I call it that, pre-COVID, I think needed changing, because we were very fast paced and we were very, you know, doing too much and doing, you know, just caught up in a hamster on a wheel stuff. And then obviously lockdown is complete and polar opposite. It has given us other challenges, but it's definitely slowed us down. I think when we come out of this, the ideal would be somewhere in the middle, whenever we come out of this, but it's somewhere in the middle. I don't think the pre-COVID was a pace that was sustainable either, because you saw a lot of people who would be burning out and doing too much and never have enough time for this, that, or whatever. So I think because we're creatures of habit, and you know what it is as well, I think, Stephanie, we all, as human, we can suffer from the guilt, something terrible, you know, and sometimes that's the, you know, the guilt, did I do enough? Can I do more? Can I stay that extra hour on the job? You know, this is pre-lockdown, but we have this guilt. And then when lockdown came, the guilt was a bit different. It was, you know, am I being the best homeschooling mom or dad? Am I looking after myself? And, you know, and the guilt of, you know, what am I looking after, you know, my goals or my plans while I'm on lockdown? Oh, and then the guilt of, should I not be doing better than I am? You know, so guilt is an awful thing as well, whatever way you could. And that can push us into, you know, a routine that we don't like, because of we're feeling guilty, and that pushes us into that routine of, oh, I've got to just keep on going. So whatever way you cut it, there's always two sides. I think we need to kind of come back to a little bit more center, and definitely we're needing to slow it down. But I always think as well is that I think the time to think has been a good thing. And I always said to people, you know, from coaching people, I'd say, well, look, we're going to force ourselves to think back over the last year and find something that was great about it, find something good about it. You know, just find one little thing that you can say, you know, well, that was actually good that whatever came out of lockdown. And when you start to think that way, you can kind of help your mindset start to steer in a more positive direction. Yeah, we're not where we want to be, but we're not where we used to be. And some good did come. It hasn't been all dark, whatever way you look at it.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, that's, I think definitely people have been able to kind of turn it around and focus on the good stuff as well. Do you think, you know, why we get stuck in a rut? You mentioned you're either in a rut or you're in a routine, and it really kind of, that resonates with me a lot, because, you know, when you're in a routine, you're kind of getting things done, you know, you're on a schedule and you are being, so to say, productive maybe. Do you think we fall into a rut when we lose that routine? You know, can they go hand in hand? Like I find, you know, and I was watching a lot of stuff online to see kind of how people speak about ruts. You know, do we all have the same feeling about getting in a rut? And the general consensus is that, like, you know, you get in a rut, you kind of have these prolonged periods of productivity, and you're, you know, you're on your game, you're reading your books, you're on time, you know, you're getting up when you should be, and you know, you're getting dressed and doing all the things that you want to be doing. but then getting stuck in a rut, you slowly but surely start to fall out of all those routine things that you've set up for yourself.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
kind of how it generally pans out?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, and I think for different people, it can be slightly different. Some it's faster, some it's a slow process. But basically, yeah, you're in a rut or you're in a routine. I always tell clients that, you know, you're in either one or the other. But, you know, how we fall into that rut is you take the routine away, we've got to adapt. We've now got to, you know, create a new routine that, you know, serves us or whatever else. But obviously, we've had such mad limitations over the last while and so forth. But how, I suppose, first to start off, to answer your question is, when we get stuck in a rut is when we've lost focus. We've lost motivation, but we've kind of forgotten what makes us go after things in the first place. You know, you've heard it talk before, I'm sure, about the why behind what we do. You know, we can get busy what we do and how we do it, but sometimes we can lose the why we started this thing in the first place. So whether that be your job, whether that be, you know, the gym, whether that be a relationship or whatever, we can lose that with routine. We get busy in the mechanics of it, but we really need to go back to the heart of it. And I think that's how we can get stuck in a rut, because we lose that focus, lose that structure, lose that routine. And that's what we have to adapt to. But now we get stuck because it's like trying to get that drive. It's like a car that breaks down. You know, it's you're trying to get it to go again. And if you have to push a car, it's really hard at the start, you know, but when you build up a bit of momentum, that's how you start to move again. And it's true for us. You know, it's kind of like you can't stop a train when it's running, but, you know, put a lump of wood in front of a train when it stops and it won't start, you know, that kind of way. So momentum is a powerful thing. But momentum, I always break it down like this. When people say about, you know, I've lost all motivation. That's kind of, they'll brandage it, or, you know, stuck in a rut for that reason. They're just stuck because they're not moving forward. And there is a part of how you're viewing your situation and how you frame it. I think that's a part of it too. But I always say motivation, I always break it into two words. I always break it down to motive and action. And I said, so when you have a good, healthy motive and you take action, it builds motivation. And if you want to get out of a rut, you know, it's kind of like you got to start digging. If you're feeling at the, you know, the bottom of that hole, you've got to start digging. If you want to get up a mountain, you've got to start walking, you know. And some of us are very summit focused. And I mean, I read, you know, some great stories of, I just love Everest, I'm fascinated with it. But I've read so many stories about people. And what I kind of seen, a common trend is that what makes people give up or quit their training and such, they're summit focused. They're only seeing the top and this big mountain and the top. They're not seeing the steps and all the little stages in between. And it's just focusing on the next step and the next, you know, base camp and then the next camp and the next camp. Don't be looking at the summit. Just look at where you're at today. And it is baby steps with everything. But like I say, you know, that's the action that we can take. But when it comes to the motive is, I would say, you know, the why behind what we do. When we can stir ourselves up again and kind of go, you know what? What is it that makes me kind of come alive? And it may be nothing to do with your career. It may be nothing to do with what you're doing. And that's okay. It could be just simply a hobby, or even just, you know, for a lot of people, they've put on the weight over this time. And it's just going, well, look, what is it behind? What's your motivation behind it? The why, as I say, the motive. And when you kind of revisit that, and for everyone, it's different. When you revisit that, that can make you come alive. That can kick you into touch with action. And then that then done consistency is what will create motivation. And motivation is like pushing that car. It's really hard to get going at the start when it's broken down. But if you just keep pushing it and pushing it, it will get easier. And we kind of just sometimes need that little bit of push. But I will say, on a side note to that, a lot of us then try and push ourselves to do too much. And that's what I mean by summit focus. Yeah. We're trying to conquer the mountain in a day, and we're trying to do too much. And then we don't do anything because it feels so overwhelming. So, you know, you've got to pace yourself.
So the motive is really kind of the key, you know, turning point at the start that's going to push you to do things, or it's going to maintain the push. How do you find the motive? I think the motive might be this, maybe it might be that. How do you help somebody find the motive?
Yeah, and this is the thing. And we're so not in tune to thinking this way. You know, the motive behind what gets us, what makes us, I always say this, what makes you come alive? What did you used to do that gave you'd lose time doing? You could, like, you know, we were talking previous about, you know, what would you be always talking to people about, and it would make you kind of light up. I love talking about this, you know. What are those things? Because here's the secret sauce, and it's not really a secret, but this is the thing we don't focus on enough. And I think schools do a lot of great work, but they don't always kind of steer us in this direction. They focus on how to make money and find a career, but they don't always, should we say, get us to find what brings us fulfillment, or what brings us happiness or peace or calm, you know? So like, you can be great in academia, but studying terribly with anxiety. And in academia world, it's not really going to deal with your anxiety. It's like a separate thing. And here's what I mean by that is we can look at our careers and we can look at the stuff that we do. And that's important because that's stuff that we do. But we must also look at, well, am I getting a sense of fulfillment? Am I getting a sense of purpose? Am I getting, you know, happiness from this? Am I enjoying this? And you've got to look at reality and ask yourself, well, is it giving you that? Because if you stay where you're at and none of those kind of, you know, boxes are being ticked, you're going to run out of steam. You're going to end up being frustrated. And what I've seen with people who went into, you know, lockdown or whatnot, they were in a job to make the money and the purpose was the money. You know, the reason I'm here is to make a few quid. Yeah. And that's everyone who works. But they lost really why they started in that career or why they started in that job in the first place. And if your job, like money is what we call an extrinsic motivator. It's external. But if I always ask people this, and this is where people get caught because we think, well, I've got to make a few quid. That's the way I'm doing my job. And here's what I say. What are you making a few quid for? Well, so I can put a roof over my head, you know, so I can, you know, have somewhere to live and, you know, have a car and because I want to buy these nice things. I said, right, so you're the money is only a tool, but the reason you're doing your job is to buy these things and have these things. What do those things symbolize to you? Well, the house, the roof over my head, whatever, that symbolizes maybe a sense of success or fulfillment to you that you've achieved something. It also gives you security. It also ticks the needs of, you know, food and water and a shelter, you know, so they're the needs you're trying to fulfill. And you kind of go, okay, when you start to see it like that, you say, right, okay, now why do you want that car? You know, and say, well, so I can get from A to B and, you know, and my friends have good cars. I want to have a good car. So that's a motivator that I'd call as extrinsic because now you're wanting to get that car because you're trying to keep up with someone. That's not a good why. But the why of putting a roof over your head is a good why. So you start to break it down like that, but ask, what is it in return that I'm getting emotionally for pursuing this thing? And that's how you discover your why.
And you can kind of encourage people to write down those thoughts as well, you know, to break them down by themselves. It's almost an exercise you can do by yourself.
I would say to, I mean, when I work with clients, we will do it together because not everyone knows what questions to ask themselves. It takes about 10, 15 minutes to get there. And once you get there, you start to come alive because I was working with someone who'd lost the flair for their job and they felt stuck in a rut and they were like in this job. They're like, don't like the job anymore. And I said to them, they worked in a veterinary. And I said, well, why did you get into this job? Well, it was a good career, you know, money would be good. But going back before that, why did you choose veterinary? When someone said veterinary to you when you were 18 going into college to pick your course, why did you say veterinary? Oh, because I love animals. You love animals. And what do you love animals? I love helping animals. And we revisited that. They're still in that career today, although they were nearly thinking of leaving it at one point because they revisited why they started that career in the first place. So you can really figure out a lot about yourself as well, what motivates you. And I always say, is it a good motivation or is it a negative motivation? Is it an external motivator or is it an internal motivator? And internal would be, you know, fulfillment or happiness or peace or calm or sense of purpose or belonging. You know, they're all internal motivators and they're the ones you want to fulfill because when you fulfill them, you care a whole lot less about the money then. You start to focus on things that are like rewarding and you go home feeling job satisfaction, so to speak, because it's ticking a lot of your human needs, not just your financial ones.
Yeah, so it's truly like a maintenance thing to stop yourself getting caught in a rut or kind of getting off the beaten track for yourself to kind of circle back and to really focus on, you know, what am I here for? Like, what am I really chasing and what am I doing?
Yeah, you know, and I think we have an awful habit of overthinking, you know, what is the purpose of me? You know, and that can be that's a very big statement and a very big question to answer. I wouldn't get lost in that. I just say, listen, what is the purpose of you today? You know, what are you about now? And it's not that you wake up every day feeling like, you know, I've got a sense of purpose to take on the world. You know, it's not even that because you can't sustain that level of passion. But the point is that you just kind of know why you're doing what you're doing, not just what you're doing. And that's really, really important. And I think mindset is a huge thing. I'm all about mindset, you know, and what you set your mind to. And if you set your mind to, you know, comparing yourself, you're destined to fail. If you set your mind to, oh, I'll be happy when I get that thing, you're destined to fail because you may never get that thing. But when you can set your mind to, and it is, I suppose, an attitude of gratitude, but when you can set your mind to, you know, being grateful for what you have, but knowing what makes you come alive, because sometimes people have lost their way because they're busy. Maybe it's career or maybe it's whatever. Even relationships lose their way, you know, and there is a sense of why when it comes to a relationship as well, very much so. And when you lose your way, you can lose steam, you can lose, you know, I suppose the passion for it. And sometimes you have to rekindle, as they say in a relationship, rekindle that flame. But you sometimes have to rekindle that flame. Maybe, for example, someone saying, you know, I'm just working all the time, I've no time. And I say, well, when was the last time you did a hobby, say? And they go, I don't even know what my hobbies are. And I said, what did you used to do? You know, I used to like cycling or swimming or some whatever it might be. And I said, when was the last time you did that? Years ago. And what we neglect is that these things are so important to us as human beings. We need those happy outlets, as I call it, you know, and it sounds gonna, you know, it sounds fluffy, but it's true. Like, you have to tick all of the boxes. You're human and you have social needs, relationship needs. You've got, you know, when it comes to, you know, purpose and passion, fulfillment, they're all needs. But also having fun is a need. And even, and it sounds dramatic, but it's true, even laughing is a need. It's good to laugh, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And it's so, one that you touched on there, and I just want to kind of highlight it, because I think we all do it, and we touched on it at the beginning, but kind of focusing on the comparison of, you know, other people.
Yeah.
That's almost like the road to nowhere, as my mother would say. She's you right. know, like, it's one of those things that we truly we're all guilty of, you know. And I think if you're to, what I'm hearing from you is to kind of to always kind of check yourself in and take a step back to realize what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yeah.
And I think if you're focused on, you know, the why, and you kind of keep checking yourself in and you know, focusing back on why you're doing it for you, that all those other issues kind of, you know, go to the sides, or they kind of fade away a little bit more, and things become a little bit easier.
Very much so, you know. And it's exactly it, because I was working with a client before, and she, you know, like, she would, I suppose, represent a whole lot of people, you know. And she said, she'd wake up in the morning, grand, and I'd go on my phone and I'd be on like Instagram, and I'd be seeing all these pictures of these people, you know, living their best life and all this, you know, hashtags and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, and everything is so lovely. But she said, and that was fine. She said, I could deal with that. I was happy for them. But she said, then I'd see someone, you know, who had just trained and was, you know, looking or just done an exercise or, you know, the gym or whatever. But she said, and they'd be showing off their physique, you know, and she said, I had this problem with my belly, she said, and just the way it is, I'm very bloated. And she said, every time I'd see a picture like that, I would feel so depressed, so low, because she said, you know, it would remind me of my flaw. And I'm happy for that person. But all it would do is it was like someone putting a mirror up to her going, you know, here, look, I'm great, but reminding me of my flaw. And she says, it would ruin my day, you know, and because it would make me now aware of something I'm really not happy with and struggle with and can only do so much about, but I still have that flaw. I can't get rid of it. You know, some people say, oh, well, just work out more. She's like, I can't. I have this condition. And anyway, she came to me and she said, I just can't get past this. I'm stuck. And it started to affect her motivation, but then it started to knock her confidence. Do you ever know when you get stuck in a rut? I don't know, but like, I just noticed this, you know, myself. If you ever get stuck in a rut or overwhelmed, what starts to happen is your confidence starts to drop for some reason, because you're losing steam. You know, you're not feeling fulfilled anymore. You're not feeling maybe happy about yourself, and you start to lose confidence. And this is what she came to me, basically, confidence was on the floor, motivation was gone. And she said, I'm not saying it was that, you know, the Instagram looking at these people. And these are people I follow. She said, I like these people. It would just, when you look at online, she says, I had an awful habit of comparing, going, wow, it reminds me of how bad I am, or how, you know, the flaw I have. What did we do to deal with that? And I said, well, look, when you wake up in the morning, I want you to start thinking about what makes you come alive. So you're not picking up that phone, right? What makes you come alive? And we examined, basically, the long story short, we looked at what motivates her, what makes her come alive, what makes her get going. And obviously, you know, there was a bit more to it than that, but that's the general consensus of it. And we examined her why, what she was about, what she was going after in life, all of these things. And I said, and you're not to look at the Instagram in the morning. Instead, I want you to look at, you know, your whys. I want you to look at, and what we did was, I do this exercise with some people. It's very simple, very practical. It's not rocket science. And I always say, I want you to describe yourself in three words. And I would say this with clients quite often, describe yourself in three words. And they would pick three words, your best self now, your best self. No negative, I want your best self. And they would describe themselves in three words, right? And I would say, now, so that person who you've just described is you, and you're going to go throughout your day like that. Now, I want you to think about the stressful incident that you maybe are aware of might happen today in work, or might happen at home, or whatever. Think of that stressful incident. Now, I want you to, because we're going to preempt it, and I want that person who you described in those three words, so say it was happy, relaxed, and focused. I want your happy, relaxed, focused person to deal with that stressful situation. So it would set her mindset from the very beginning of the day. Now, I said, I want your happy, you know, passionate and focused, whatever the three words are, self, to look at Instagram. And I said, I want you to look at it in those eyes when you do look at your Instagram. So you don't look at it first thing. You're going to set your mindset. And this is very simple, as I say, but it works. She would then go on Instagram and she goes, I started to see it different. She started to see that, you know, her flaw, maybe there's other people out there who have the flaw. She started to reach out with her flaw, helping other people, right? I don't want to go into it because you'll probably might figure out who she is, but she did exceptionally well, and, you know, followers and so forth, because she said, I'm going to be true to me. And I'm going to use what I see as a flaw as a positive by helping people. And she had like cataclysm. I mean, she just went epic. I mean, it was literally amazing. And I said, see, because you're the happy, passionate, focused person with that mindset when you look at things. And how you set your mindset is so important, because if we just go on Instagram, the first thing we wake up, we haven't even thought about anything much. We are now basically going to be programmed by what we see and by what we react to. But sometimes you have to consciously set your mindset. Your mindset is like a radio station. You can get in the car, say, and whatever station is on, and you just listen to it, and that's fine. Or you can get in the car and go, no, I'm going to listen to this now. You either set the radio or the radio is going to set you, and your mindset is exactly like that. So that's what we did there, and I think that was kind of helpful.
Yeah, it's truly kind of like checking in with yourself, isn't it? You know, to kind of set that standard and to, because it's not as if, you know, we don't become unfunny or we don't become unrelaxed. Like we are who we are, you know, because it's how we're wired. So it's just about focusing back in on those really good points and the best.
Yeah. And it's
to not lose
sure.
it.
And not to lose it. And I think self-awareness is a powerful thing. And I think the worst thing for us, you know, the quote is, what is it? Comparison is the thief of joy. When we fall into comparing without kind of being self-aware, we end up being very reactive to what we see, positive, negatively, or indifferent. You're better off trying to get, you know, I always think the morning is key for this, but get up and set your mind, your mindset, set your mind, you know, and be, you know, with the gratitude and so forth. But just those three words, first thing in the morning, if you thought about that, if you do that every single day, it's amazing what it actually can do. It's a simple thing, but it's amazing the way you start to change. You start to fire a different part of your brain. I mean, neuroscience has shown that when you start to think like that, the cognitive part of the brain, you actually think your part of your brain lights up, so to speak, because you're now thinking in that more positive mindset, but you're thinking in a constructive, creative, you know, happier outlook perspective, if that makes sense. And when you start to think that way of like, this is who I am, this is what I'm being, you're not, should we say, beating yourself down. Instead, you're picking yourself up, which is really, really important. And it is, like you said, it's not that we get unfunny, or it's not that we choose anxiety and we lose our sense of, you know, calm or peace or whatever. It's progressive and gradual. But we've got to make sure that we're ticking the boxes and saying, when was the last time I, you know, had a bit of a laugh? Or when was the last time I watched a comedy? Or when was the last time I did something that I actually just love to do? Tick the boxes of those, you know, those human needs that we can so easily neglect when we get busy doing other stuff. Or if we get stuck in a rut and we ask ourselves, when was the last time you treated yourself? I'm not talking about the emotional bar of chocolate. I'm talking about where you treated yourself to something that was nice and you kind of went, oh, that was so great. I had a lovely evening.
Yeah.
We have to find those things. It's so important.
And would you recommend, just from a practicality standpoint, do you recommend to check in with yourself every day, like kind of maybe a journal or a book or something that you can reset your, you know, yourself, or check into yourself to see where your mindset is at?
Yeah. So I have basically, journaling is something I always encourage. And I don't mean, it's not like a dear diary and your whole day is recorded. If you do that whatever works for you, that's fine. But even if you're not a journaler, you know, I'm like, well, just write down how you were that day. I mean, sometimes some people will journal quite, you know, in depth. I'm just saying, write down what challenge you had today and how you felt about it and what can you do better next time. Right. And then what happens is you'll see over time maybe a pattern or a trend of something that's catching you a lot and kind of, as I would say, robbing your joy or whatever, you know, quite on a regular basis. And when you start to pick up on that, you go, I need to change how I think about that. I know, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy for stuff like that, it's you reword your inner dialogue or you counteract it. And some people will come to me, Mark, I can see that I'm really overthinking small things. And I say, well, you know what, I had a really bad, some would call it a breakdown, like, I mean, years and years and years ago. I was about, 12, 13 years ago now. But I basically burnt out and anxiety got so bad and like ruminating, catastrophic thinking. But I was literally, the doctors wanted to medicate me and everything, like, and I just didn't for me. I just didn't want to. I always know it was bad. I'm talking bad now. And I'd never experienced anxiety or anything like this. I wasn't even an anxious person per se. But anyway, and that's probably a whole other day's podcast, but I got through that. And people say, well, how did you deal with the rumination or the overthinking? In fact, that's why I brought that course out on my website, the anxiety course, because I put down, just recorded what happened to me, how I got through it, and the tools and strategies that I know worked, you know, because there's a lot of stuff out there. So if you say to an anxious person, you're just overthinking, just stop thinking. You can't just stop thinking.
It's the worst thing I can say, isn't it?
It's the worst thing you can say to anybody is like, just stop thinking about it. Can you not just stop thinking about it? Like, as if there's something, you know, you can't. Because you're emotionally, mentally engaged, and it's something you genuinely care of, because that's what you're thinking of. But basically, I came to a very simple process when it comes to overthinking. That is, I would say, I always found that anxious thought would always start with something like, what if? You know, it was a what if question. What if this happened? What if that happened? It was always what if. And I ended up coming to a place of, every time I say what if, I'm going to say so what. And it's not, I'm saying so what to the actual event I'm thinking of. I'm saying so what to my thoughts. Because what I learned, and I think everyone, we all need to learn this as people, we take our thoughts way too seriously. We listen to our thoughts as if they're factual, as if they're coming from our heart, and they're not. Your brain is like a computer. Yeah. And we just take our thoughts way too seriously. And you have to start to laugh at yourself and go, like, don't get me wrong. When I was in the height of or the peak of anxiety and telling me to laugh at some of these ruminations, which would keep me awake for weeks, it was not, how am I going to laugh? But I got to the place of, because knowledge is key and getting the right help with someone is key. When I started to understand it, that the brain is just doing what it does. You know, that's what it does, you know, figuring out threats. And it's now figuring out potential threats because, you know, I've got anxiety I got to deal with and it's firing it off and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, I learned to start taking my thoughts a lot less seriously. Because I realized, I said, if my brain and my thoughts were fully under my control, I had this epiphany one day, Stephanie. It was like a moment. Do you ever have a moment? And you just go, right? Yeah, you know yourself, right? So yeah. I had this moment one day and I was in the shower. That's where I have a lot of thinking going on. And I said, you know, if all my thoughts were true, like as in, if I thought of what if, I would react as if it was reality. And I started thinking, if my brain was fully in my control, if my thoughts were fully in my control, I would never have a nightmare, because why would I ever choose that for myself? But yet my brain gives me nightmares every now and then. And, exactly. And I said to myself, I would never be confused on what should I do here, you know, because I'd have, will I do this? Will I do that? And I realized my thoughts are not always my own. They're just my brain's way of computing. I see obviously the brain is a computer. And I said to myself, so don't take your thoughts so serious. Listen to, and I put it like this, and for want of a better way even, but I always say, you know in your heart and gut what's right and what's wrong. Sometimes your thoughts don't always agree. And that was anxiety for me. And I ended up getting over that. And when I thought a thought that it was, you know, a mad, whatever it was, rumination, or, you know, someone's going to die, or God forbid, I would just say, you know, to the what if, I would just end up going, so what? I know some people will use, like, you know, what if, and they'll answer it with, well, even if, you know, and they might answer it that way. It's the same kind of thing. For me, it was just, so what? I'm just not bothered listening to those thoughts anymore, you know, because I don't want to think about those things. I don't want to pursue those things. And if those events ever do happen, I'll deal with it then. That was my approach anyway. Sorry for the long answer. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's funny because it's something that I, like, have learned myself. And I, you know, you feel like you want to tell everybody, you know, that your thoughts are not facts, you know, but it's very hard to say, oh no, but I think I know. I think I, you know, and we all think we know, you know, we really do all think we know the truth about these thoughts that we're having in our head, but it takes a while to understand that they're not facts. And again, that's something that you have to work on, like, you know, all the time, sure. Really, to make sure that you're not letting your thoughts really decide, you know, your emotions or anything, or you're not letting your thoughts have much authority over it. So that it all does definitely tie up.
And,
you know,
yeah. I think when it comes to people getting stuck in a rut, like I was saying about your mindset and tuning it in, you're basically taking control of you going, right, you know, and whether it'd be those three words that describe your best self or whatever it might be that works for you, but you're setting the ground running, but you're deciding, here's how we're going to start today. So that you're not as vulnerable to then things coming up or susceptible to things, because you're setting the wheel in motion. You're, I suppose, in one sense, controlling what you're going after or what you're thinking. You're controlling your outlook for that day, your mindset for that day. And I think we deal a whole lot better when we take, you know, the bull by the horns and we decide that, rather than it just be fed to us through social media or the news or whatever else. And when we start just tuning into watching the news all the time, you're going to feel down because it's not happy news, you know? So you do have to take some time to stance and go, right, I'm going to start to change. And this is true for limiting beliefs. When people say, I'm not enough, when people say, mm-hmm. oh, am I doing enough? Or when people feel guilty, it's the same kind of thing, which as we mentioned guilt at the very start, but it is the same kind of thing. You take control and you start saying, you know what? I give myself permission to not feel guilty. Today is a new day. I'll do my best, but it's not about being the best. It's just about me doing my best. And if I fail today, tomorrow is a new day. And you're just literally taking that approach and take the pressure off ourselves. We're brutal for that.
Yeah, no, 100%. So the last question, it's kind of more of a personal question, but I wanted to ask you what your maybe top three books are. And I know you probably get asked this a lot, but I always love to ask people this question.
It's a great question. Now, I love reading, so I'll always have that. Top three. Well, I tell you what, one book that it meant a lot to me because it made me realize that just because that's my opinion, it doesn't mean it's the only opinion. It doesn't mean it's always the right one. And it was Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I read that book when I was about 19, 20 years old. And that just for some reason made me open. I don't know. It just opened my eyes because there was a story in it. I always remember about Carnegie. Dale walks in with his friend to an art gallery that was just being launched. And the guy who launched it invited the two of them in. And he said, you know, well, you're very welcome, lads. Did you see this painting here over here? And it's an amazing piece of art. And he describes the art and the artist. And Dale Carnegie's friend is going, no. And he starts arguing, no, that's not the artist. That actually comes from a different region. That's not him or whatever. There was basically a confusion about the background of this particular painting. And Dale's friend, when they left the party, he said, why didn't you speak up there and say, because you know as well as I do, that doesn't come from that region or whatever the argument was. And Dale Carnegie says, you know what? You've got to pick your battles. We were there as his guest. And it was more important we're there to support him, not argue with him. And I was like, wow, because sometimes it's not always right to speak up. And that was a big lesson for me. Yeah. I read that book then and there's loads of other stories in it. I was like, I need to read this book. This is because I would have thought you always stand up when you see something wrong. No, you don't. Sometimes you're better off going, what's the real purpose of being here? I'm here to support. You know, so that book definitely, anyway.
And that book is still going strong, you know, in 2021. People are still reading that book too.
Yeah, absolutely. I read this other book, right? I actually have it on my shelf here and it was, where is it gone? Give me one sec. I actually have it here and it was, and it's a really old book. I don't know what, anyway, when I, it's when I was going through my kind of, you know, my breakdown, so to speak, or anxiety overwhelming, it's More Help for Your Nerves by Dr. Claire Weeks. And she works with people who literally were, you know, committed because they had such bad breakdowns. And if you're someone who struggles with anxiety or your nerves, as they used to call it, Dr. Claire Weeks, More Help for Your Nerves. I thought that was a very good book. Right. Definitely recommend that one. Yeah, it's a very good one. And another one then, I have so many books now. You're really catching me off guard. I'm trying to think which ones. I know. You know what was a good book I read? Definitely. Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. That's a powerful book.
Right.
And have you heard of that one?
No, I've never heard of any. Well, I heard of the How to Win Friends, but I didn't realize that it was. I didn't think that it was one that you were going to point out.
Yeah, that was definitely a good one. I mean, I could give you 20 books to be honest, but if you had to say books that meant something to me at the time when I read them, that's like More Help for Your Nerves, Dr. Claire Weeks. You wouldn't really read that unless you're struggling with anxiety, because that was so. But it was relevant to me at the time, so like it meant a lot. It had an impact. But Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, was probably one of my best books of all time. If you had to pick the best out of the three. And basically he, psychologist who was in the concentration camps, he was in Auschwitz and two other concentration camps as well. And as a prisoner, he was in the middle of writing a book about man's meaning, it was called. And he changed the name to Man's Search for Meaning because when he went into the concentration camps, he discovered, how can you find meaning when you're locked up? Everyone you know has been, you know, murdered, and you could be murdered tomorrow. And he says, how can we find hope in such a dire situation? What can one do? And the book basically is that discoveries that he made. He has gone on to create what's called logotherapy. And it's all about, if you discover your purpose or your meaning, you know, life becomes a whole lot happier and a whole lot better for you and fulfilling. So you can see why it resonated a lot with me with that particular book, because I enjoyed it. It made sense. But I remember him, he speaks at one point with a rabbi who was depressed because his wife, his kids, and everyone, he said, everyone I know is now gone. And this is after the concentration camp. And he says, everyone I know is gone. He says, how can I continue? What can I do? And through a conversation, and I'm shortening it down here, but He said, well, what purpose can I find? He says, well, find this purpose. Would you prefer that they are here mourning you or you're here mourning them? And he said, well, I'd rather I be here mourning them because I wouldn't like to see the pain that they would go through if I was there. And he says, well, that is the purpose in your pain. He says, start with that. The fact that you're here and they're not, and it's not the other way around. He said, they're not experiencing the pain. You are, but you're carrying that pain. He said, that's the purpose in your pain. And I had to get my head around that. He said, but start there. And it was basically like a switch went off. And he says, you know, but I am here and it's not them. And that's better that I'm here and it's not them in that sense of pain sense. And I can use that and move forward. And one of the quotes he says, I'm paraphrasing it now, but he says, basically, if you find your meaning, you'll be able to deal with anything in life, essentially. Mm. So really, really good book. It's only a small book, but it's really, really good. Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl. Highly recommend it to everybody.
Yeah, and that goes back to exactly what you said about, you know, getting stuck in a rut to find your meaning, find your purpose and find your why. You know,
it is. And it's not always about necessarily like, the why behind your work. It's just about the why. It could be just something you do once a week that gives you that buzz of excitement or passion or love or fulfillment. It could be something you do just the weekends even. But, you know, make sure you have discover that thing and don't be waiting till lockdown gets lifted to go back to it. No, go back to whatever facet or way you can of it now. And that will most certainly, once you get moving then in any direction, you know, in a healthy direction, that is, it's one step at a time. And that is the key, you know, it's finding what makes us come alive. I'm writing a blog at the minute about how to find your purpose. And it's kind of 10 questions around that. That's actually coming out next week. But yeah, so and I did a pod, like another blog on it where I wrote down how to find your why. And I think it's so true. We all need to sometimes go, I know what I do. I know how I do it. But why am I doing it again?
Yeah, well, if everybody listening is feeling the way I'm feeling, I'll definitely be checking out that blog post to find your why, because I realize how important it is and to maintain and, you know, not to lose it and to, you know, to always kind of revert back to it.
It is. Do you know what? I actually, real quick, there was a guy I read about, Dr. Jim Stockdale, and he was a general in a prisoner of war camp. And long story short, they asked him, how did you survive? And he says, I had nothing to hold on to because I could have been murdered at any time. I was tortured. But he said, I held on to hope. And he said, the hope was, I will one day get out of here and I'm going to use this as a positive impact on anyone I come across in the future. He said, so I held on to that hope. And he says, no, I didn't know if I was going to make it out. But he said, I'm going to hold on to the fact that if I get out of here, I'm going to use this for good, my experience, and share with people to find hope. He said, that was all I clung to. He said, all I clung to was hope. And he says, sometimes that can be enough to get you through it. And it's amazing when you start tuning into that way. It was a great story. He was a prisoner of war for a number of years. But sometimes you just have to hold on to that hope going, look, I don't know how I'm going to get through it. I don't know when it's coming to an end, but I know it'll come to an end at some point. So what can I do today to make it count?
Yeah, truly. And I love those stories. They're so like inspirational, going back to real life stuff when you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel there, you know.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, there's so many, like Bear Grylls broke his back, said he'd never walk again. But then he saw a picture of Everest and he said, I'm going to conquer Everest one way or the other. He said, even if I have to crawl to the summit. And he eventually got back walking, and Bear Grylls, international star now. He was the youngest man to ever conquer Everest. So the power of mindset, I'm not saying this mindset fixed his back, but having that, I don't know how I'm going to climb it, but I will climb it even if I can't walk. You know, having that, I suppose, attitude of survival, or that attitude of hope is such a powerful thing. But it doesn't just come out of the sky. You have to work on it. And when you start to discover your passion or find a sense of purpose about something, that's when you really start to move in a right direction. ¶¶